Welcome to Extreme Genes, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Hey, glad you found us. It's America's Family History Show, Extreme Genes and ExtremeGenes.com. It is Fisher here, your radio root sleuth on the program where we shake your family tree and watch the nuts fall out. Today's guests, I mean, we're going all over the place with them. We're going to start with Daniel Horowitz coming up in about 8 minutes or so. He is with MyHeritage.com, and he's going to go with us through David Alan Lambert's DNA matches, because MyHeritage is now giving you the opportunity to freely provide them your DNA results from whatever companies you've got them through, and then potentially match up cousins with you through MyHeritage.com. We'll get more into that a little bit later on. Plus, later in the show, we're going to talk to photo expert Ron Fox, who's going to be back because it is Veterans Day weekend. We're going to talk about how you can find photographs of your veterans, your sailors, your soldiers, your Marines, whatever units. And he's got some lesser known archives where you can research and perhaps find pictures of your loved ones, your family members, your ancestors back in the day during their time of service. So I'm looking forward to that. Hey, just a reminder, if you haven't signed up yet for our Extreme Genes newsletter, the Weekly Genie, you can do so at ExtremeGenes.com. Very easy. Just fill out the form right there at the top right of the home page. And also follow us along on Facebook, because all through the week, we've got a great community of genies who are sharing all kinds of great stuff. Right now, let's head off to Beantown and talk to my good friend David Alan Lambert, the chief genealogist of the New England Historic Genealogical Society and AmericanAncestors.org. Hello, David.
Hello, sir. How are you today?
I am well. You know, what a week it has been. We had the election and an incredible turnout and an incredible result. And it got me to thinking about all the different presidents that I'm related to. And I think a lot of people probably have no idea that they could be related to so many presidents because their roots go back so far. How many presidents do you think you're related to?
Oh, I think there's probably about 12 to 15, and sometimes more than one time through various branches. But I can tell you the president-elect and I probably have no common ancestors, but he may with my wife, because she has Scottish ancestry.
So. That's right. He's fairly recent, right? I mean, his family.
He is. And that's one of the things that limits possible common kinship. In fact, Andrew Jackson had the same problem. His parents came over in the 18th century from Ireland. You know how early Irish records are. Trying to find a common ancestor might be tough.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got 10 of them. And it's fascinating when you get back and you come to realize, oh, I'm related to this Democrat, I'm related to this Republican, and some of the history involved in that. If you think about what would happen if an ancestor was eliminated from your tree, how you would be different, how history would be different, because some of these people were also among his descendants or her descendants.
Maybe we wouldn't even realize that they were president. I mean, right? Gerry Ford and I were related to someone who was alive in the Revolutionary War.
Which is fairly recent, really, when you look at it.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable. All right, let's get going with our family histoire news for this week. Where do we start, David?
Well, last year ended up being the end of the sesquicentennial celebration for the Civil War in Virginia, and the Library of Virginia worked and gathered up over 33,000 items from Virginia homes and attics and shoeboxes of things left over from the Civil War. It's mind-blowing to think of all the things that have been in private hands for over 150 years.
Isn't that incredible? And don't you wish every state would do that? Because these people are expecting maybe to find a few hundred items, and they wound up with 33,000, including a phenomenal letter of a Confederate POW who was dying of his wounds, and he wrote a note to his mom as he was fading away.
Well, you know, it's things like that that are these private archives. So fire, flood, or just negligence, things have been lost in the past 150 years. So think about just things in the past 100 years. We have the centennial of World War I coming up next spring. If people have photos and letters, how much private archives and home collections may make the difference for future genealogists.
Right, filling in the gaps in history.
Exactly. Kind of a sad day for a coroner out in Los Angeles, California. There were two men by the name of Jorge Hernandez that were in the office of the coroner that week. Sadly, they cremated the wrong one.
Ooh.
Yeah, so the family is looking to have a lawsuit. Unfortunately, the young man who was 26, his body was not supposed to be cremated, and the older man was, and they got it mixed up. So, you know, sometimes when you wonder when you can't find your ancestors, yeah. Well, here's a possibility of future genealogists being very confused.
Yeah, you got to check the numbers as well as the names when you've got bodies in your place, I suspect.
My next story echoes Veterans Day, but in Canada, they refer to it as Remembrance Day, the ending of World War One. And there is a fellow by the name of Eric Dahl up in Drumheller, Alberta, Canada, who has been cleaning by hand the moss-covered headstones that have been neglected for years, because in his thoughts, it is November 11th every day.
Isn't that great? And the thing about this guy is he's been out of work since March. So he'll go in some days and he'll do 10 or 15. Some days he says, I only have time to do one or two, but he still can't find a job. Maybe the PR from this thing will make people realize, hey, this is a guy who obviously is passionate about whatever he does. Hopefully he'll get some work here soon, you know?
Well, you know, my tip kind of is about yard cleanup and genealogy. When you're out there with the kids and the grandkids, and you're at that great oak tree or maple tree that's been growing in your yard for years, save one of the leaves. Put together a family tree of family trees. Maybe you reach back to your home in Connecticut, Fish, and get a leaf off the front lawn from a tree that you had a swing on when you were a kid. You know, and like I say, it's something that, you know, maybe you don't have to save the leaf for so long. You take a photograph of it, because we know in genealogy, we all have a lot of stuff.
Yes, yes, we do.
And speaking of stuff, AmericanAncestors.org invites you to become a free guest member. This week, with the idea of Veterans Day, we are releasing for free our database of Revolutionary War pension receipts from 1827 to 1836. And these are actually the pay stubs from many, many checks that were handed out for veterans during the Revolutionary War when they got their check. So,
wow, I like that.
Yeah. So, well, that's all I have from Beantown this week. And I'll look forward to talking with Daniel later in this episode about what he found in my genealogical matches.
And we're kind of doing an international Skype thing today. We've got our good friend David Allen Lambert on the line from Boston. And we've got Daniel Horowitz, our friend from MyHeritage in Israel, the home base of MyHeritage.com, which, of course, is especially huge and strong with European records. And Daniel, welcome to the show, first of all, and I'm very excited about some of the moves that MyHeritage is doing right now that can give people another place to go with their DNA results. Tell us about this.
Thank you very, very much, Scott. Yes, indeed, MyHeritage and myself are very excited. First, because we have more than 10 years already on the field, and we're very strong, as you said, with records and family trees in Europe and worldwide. 42 languages, 85 million users, and we understand all those nuances, and we're able to match trees and records no matter the language.
Yeah,
that
I love
are.
That. Love
so
that.
We're already very strong on that.
I love that feature with MyHeritage, that you can actually translate what one name means in one language and translate it into my language, no matter what my language is. What is it, 40 some odd that you have right now?
Right now, 42 languages.
42 languages. Now you've given people the opportunity to take their DNA results that they've maybe already had from the big three and share them for free with your people over in MyHeritage. And tell us what this is going to mean to people.
Well, the important thing here is that there are companies out there already doing DNA tests for many years, and we understand that a lot of people already have done their DNA test. So we are allowing to take those raw data from any company that you have tested and upload it to MyHeritage. We will apply our own technology to match it with other people that also upload their DNA test and compare that also with the family trees that they have. The huge advantage is that whenever you test in any company, you will get obviously matches with people within that company.
Right.
But as MyHeritage is a repository for every company's DNA, you will get matches between different companies.
That's why we have David on the line, because he has actually done this and gone and sent his raw data into MyHeritage. And David, I'm thinking Daniel's got some results for you, some interesting stuff to find out.
Well, it's always nice to get new cousins. And by the way, thanks for all the help.
And you actually was a very nice test case, I should say, because you tested with the three main companies out there and you actually uploaded your three raw data files. And let me just give one piece of advice and educate a little bit our audience, because each company will test different parts of the DNA, different snippets from the DNA. So how MyHeritage can find matches? Well, because although each one tests different parts, there are some common parts that all test the same. So we're focusing on those to be able to match between different companies. And of course, if you have tested with a particular company, then your matches are going to be 100% accurate with matches from those same company.
Once I had it on there, really, it was very simplistic. It, you know, it was allowed me to upload the data, and then it was a matter of waiting a little while I was processing it. And I have to admit that there must be a refinement that's recent, because now I have more matches that I can see geographically that fit in. And when it first went live with the matches, I had people on there that I know in the genealogy field. I said, how can we be related? And I looked at their tree, and I looked at my tree, and I scratched my head, and I said, do I have a paternity event that I don't know about?
If you are in your MyHeritage website right now, under the DNA tab on the main menu, you have a couple of options, and the one where we're looking right now is the DNA matches. You had a huge amount of matches until November 3rd. And what happened on November 3rd is that we improved hugely the process of the matching technology, and we went out of our beta stage, and now we are in a regular stage. You have 23 actual matches. And we improve them, and we haven't stopped that. And we're going to keep improving those matches in order to avoid those false positives that you receive at the beginning. I remember you had one with some Ukrainian guy.
The Y DNA I have is actually from Bosnia 35,000 years ago. And I thought, well, maybe he could be distantly from that. But I must say, quality is far better than quantity. So I'm more than happy to deal individually with these 23 new cousins and figure out how we actually come to be related.
And the good news with all this is it's free. So as MyHeritage develops this stuff, you don't have to worry about, oh, what's the results that I'm getting for my money? Well, right now it's just coming out of the beta stage. And so you can provide this information. And then as they continue to improve it, you're going to find the potential of many more matches, especially if you have a fairly recent European heritage. Isn't that right, Daniel?
That's totally right. And it's not only free now, but if you upload now your raw data, you will get matches free for life. So more people are going to keep uploading their information, are going to use different companies or the MyHeritage recently released a DNA test, and we're going to talk about it in a second. But you're going to get those matches, those new matches, for free ever, not only to see the matches, as I would like to show David, but also to be able to contact the other person, which is also very important.
Sure.
Because if you don't have a point of contact, then they're practically useless.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is this free upload is for a limited time.
That's correct.
Well, I think it's a wonderful thing, and obviously for those that have tested, like myself with other companies, it's a good way to find more potential relations.
Right.
And when you mentioned about a recent immigrant from Europe, my grandfather came from England. So I have people that came to Massachusetts between 1629 and 1930. So it'd be interesting to see if any of my British cousins find me.
Yeah, well, I don't know if this is the case or not, but I see, for example, you have a match with Steve, and he's, according to MyHeritage, your third or fourth cousin. And of course, we know that in the DNA, there is a grade of ambiguity here because how it's spread on the family tree. But we will tell you also the percentage of the shared DNA and the amount of segments. And this is what's going to give you the lead, because the bigger the segment or the amount of segments tested and matched, it means that it's a closer relative to you. And the other thing that you see on this screen is that Steve has a family tree with 13 plus thousand individuals on his family tree. So you can very easily see part of this family tree. And very soon, you're also going to be able to see a list of family names that matches between your tree and his tree. So you will really know from which branch this match is coming and if it's really relevant to you or not. And of course, a big orange button that allow you to contact Steve and say, hey, listen, MyHeritage is telling me that we are related. Let's collaborate. Let's evaluate both trees and see if we're really matching or we really have the information to support this DNA test.
Well, that's really exciting because, I mean, ironically, Steve's last name is one of my great-grandmother's surnames. So it'll be interesting to see if he comes down through that line.
That's right. And very, very soon, we're also going to release an ethnicity report, which is going to be probably the finest on the market right now. MyHeritage is using their own users to do the ethnicity test. We have a founders population project with people received DNA kits, and this is what we're going to use in order to tell you what is your ethnicity.
That's exciting. So really, there are a lot of benefits to this. How long do you think this free period is going to last, Daniel?
Well, I'm not sure because we are like in the process of releasing different things. Right now, we're also releasing the new DNA test kit and also for a very affordable price for a limited time only. If you really are thinking of doing a test like to start with, this will be a good one to start and to go. It will give you also the ethnicity report, which is in detail is going to be reserved only for people that buy the test. But if you are just looking for more matches and more connections, upload your raw data will be sufficient right now. You really don't need to buy another test. And I'm not sure till when the company or Gilad, the CEO, is going to decide to leave this open for free. So you better hurry up, Scott.
You're right about it. It's been on my list, my to-do list, Daniel. But hey, thanks so much for your time. And of course, full disclosure, MyHeritage is a sponsor of Extreme Genes, and we're very proud to have you on. Thanks so much for the information on that. Thanks for helping out David. He needs more cousins. You know, he needs a larger family.
We will provide them.
Thank you. My holiday card list just got larger. Thank you. 23 more stamps to buy.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Daniel.
Always a pleasure, guys.
I guess that is the downside, right? You got to buy more holiday cards because you've got more cousins because you found them through your DNA matches. Thanks, guys. This segment's been brought to you by LegacyTree.com. And coming up next, we're going to talk to Ron Fox, the photo expert that we've had on the show many times before. Fisher here, your radio root sleuth. And the Veterans History Project is going on. And I bring this up right now because, of course, it's Veterans Day weekend. The Library of Congress is putting it on, and they want to keep soldiers' stories alive. And the project is primarily an oral history program that collects and preserves interviews of America's wartime vets. And it makes accessible oral and written histories and original photographs and letters and diaries and other service-related documents of vets who served from World War I through the more recent conflicts, which took place, of course, in Iraq and Afghanistan. So they're calling on the public to record studies from veterans and submit them. And you can go to their website. site and ask their suggested questions to a veteran you know. Then keep a copy of your audio or video recording for yourself and ship off the copy to the project. It's going to be part of a permanent collection at the Library of Congress, so you want to get on top of that while you're thinking about it. And since we are thinking about it, that's why I brought my good friend Ron Fox, the photo expert, back onto the show to talk about finding veterans' photographs, old soldiers, sailors, and Marines from all the different eras, going back to what, Ron, Civil War?
Well, yeah, photographs we have back just before the Civil War. In fact, there's a lot of what we call militias or state militias that have photographs back into the 1840s.
Wow. And there are some existing photographs of Revolutionary War soldiers, right, who lived
yes.
to ripe old ages?
Absolutely. There are collections within the Smithsonian and some private collections that are fabulous of people who are aged men at the time that photographs became
a thing. Yep.
And yeah, they're out there. They're very rare and also very valuable.
How many photographs of Revolutionary soldiers do you think exist, just as a wild guess?
Oh, probably 200 or 300.
Really?
That many, yeah.
So there's a potential that somebody's ancestor was photographed and that's out there. Are all of them scanned and available of those 200 or 300, or a
no.
lot of sitting in private collections?
A lot of them are in private collections, and a lot of them, because they're daguerreotypes or ambrotypes, are not marked. And, you know, most people will never know whether that person was in the Revolution, but certainly was looks like in the photograph that they were old enough to be in it.
To have been in it. But there are some who are identified.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's some great collections. There's a gentleman by the name of Joe Bauman who has one of the finest collections in the country.
And how many does he have?
Oh, he probably has 8 or 10.
Wow.
But they're identified.
Are they valuable because of the fact they were Revolutionary
Very
soldiers?
So.
Really?
Very,
very
so.
Collectible.
Absolutely.
Okay, so if I'm going to find, say, a Civil War soldier's photograph, how would I go about that?
Well, there's a lot of Civil War photographs out there, but
sure.
the Library of Congress has a wonderful collection. But the thing is that I wanted to talk about that is not a very well-known site is the Army's Historical Repository at Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Never heard of this.
No, and it has one of the greatest collections of photographs and diaries of service people going back all the way to the Revolution as far as diaries and that, and maps and records. It is separate from the Library of Congress or Smithsonian, and it's not within the Veterans Affairs of all the military records that they keep relative to more recent service activities of an individual.
How come we haven't heard of this place?
You know, it's one of those things where people don't talk about it. I mean, you can still go to West Point where they have their records and they have photographs of some of their graduating class going back to the 1840s, you know, and see some of the great Civil War generals as young men in their cadet uniforms. You know, you go to the Naval Academy and same thing there. And, of course, the Naval Academy would also have the Marines. And, you know, later then, the Coast Guard's been around since the 1700s, but you know, they have their own records that they keep. So
this is a place to reach out to then. If you have people in the service, you can maybe start a list and go, all right, these people lived in the photographic era,
right,
beginning, say, the 1850s, and then
right.
you could start pulling it forward. Then you would reach out to each of these individual places?
Absolutely. If you go to Washington, D.C., you can go to the old Navy Yard, which is also the headquarters of 8th and I, where the Marine Corps is. This is actually in the city of Washington. Lincoln used to go there to the Navy Yard and just sit around because it was cooler by the inlet.
Now, what photographs have you located over the years that kind of excite you as you think about it?
One of the first photographs I personally got was a picture taken of my great-great-grandfather Fox, who was taken on October of 1865, and it was a proposal to his wife. And in behind the picture is the written proposal.
Oh, wow. And this was passed down through your family?
Yep.
And then how have you located any that were outside your family lines?
Well, we've been able to identify, of course, unit photos where individuals served, you know, and those records are kept at the National Archives, all of the Civil War records, and you can find out the military unit in which your ancestors served, and that would be good for the Civil War, the Indian Wars, and there are wonderful collections of military units, and your grandpa or your relative was in probably one of those unit photos.
Now, Fold 3, of course, would be a great starting point, I would think.
It is a great
people,
starting
right?
point. They do a fine job of memorializing and making histories of individuals who served in the U.S. military.
We're talking to Ron Fox, one of our photo experts and friends of the show for Extreme Jeans. And Ron, are there some smaller places other than just government sites that we might not be aware of that you can find military photos as we think about our veterans on Veterans Day weekend?
Places like Fort Douglas Military Museum in Salt Lake City, Utah. Places like the Naval Academy. You can find places like the Buffalo Soldiers Museum, which I think is in Texas, that covers black soldiers during the Indian Wars period.
Do they scan?
They scan.
Do they have them online?
They've got some online. They've got great unit photos. There's so many National Guards that also have great collections of photos that are not normally available, and many of them have been scanned, and there's a lot more that are being scanned currently. But the fact of the matter is there are a lot of different places. If your grandfather was an individual who was attached to the United States Army and was sent to Fort Leavenworth or was sent to Fort Douglas or was sent to Camp Kearney or any one of these larger military bases, they each have their own military museum on post. And in there, they have collected wonderful photographs since the beginning of photography of their units. You'll find, if you contact them, they will help you find photographs of which the unit in which your progenitor was in.
As I think about this, so it crosses my mind that there's always the assumption, I think that many of us have, that, oh, if it's not online, it doesn't exist. Or even if you went to a website for any of these places, oh, I don't see what I'm looking for there, therefore they don't have it. That's a dangerous assumption, I think.
It's a horrible assumption. It's just like everything else that we do in genealogy. Every week, there are large companies that are scanning millions of records and scanning many photographs. Family Search has done a wonderful job of putting photographs online. Many of the other companies have done a great job of providing that service. But even more so, there are a lot of military bases and like that don't have the funds because their primary duty is to protect the United States.
Sure.
But there's a lot of photos that are there. I know of universities that have collections of over 2 million photographs with only less than 40,000 of them scanned.
Oh, wow.
So think about that from the standpoint of what's out there. It is just tremendous.
Right. And they're in the archives, not necessarily online. In fact, more likely that they're not online.
Absolutely.
So that means you got to do it the old-fashioned way. Go visit the place, make phone calls, send people checks.
But that's what us genealogists do. That's what our whole thing is, on the hunt.
Yep.
As one fox hunter, you have to climb those hills and you have to go find those items.
It's great to talk to you again, Ron. Good to have you back on the show. Veterans Day weekend, we salute all the veterans who are in our audience and wish you well in finding the photographs of your soldiers and sailors and your ancestors. And you've given us some great tips as to where to look.
Thank you, Fisher.
And coming up next, our Preservation Authority, Tom Perry. He comes on every week and talks to you about your questions about preservation. Tom, good to see you again.
Good to be here.
We've got a couple more emails here from listeners who sent them to asktom@tmcplace.com. This one from Brant Fowers. Brant says, Tom, I'm very interested in getting my old 8mm and Super 8 movie films digitized, along with my old slides. Can you tell me how much you charge per foot to scan the film in MP4 files and how much to scan the slides? And then we have a second one about pricing as well. Should we do that one at the same time?
You bet.
Because everybody's going in that direction, I guess, with the holidays and everything coming up. I'd like to drop off around 10 VHS tapes, and I have about 4 to 5 of those small tapes that went into video recorders. I need them on a hard drive or something in the format that I can import into iMovie and edit easily. What is the price structure for this? And that's from Rachel Walsh. Thanks to both Brant and Rachel for those questions. But pricing is an interesting problem everywhere, isn't it, Tom?
You have to be careful. It's not like, you know, you're buying a Chevy Lumina and it's the same car, comes out of the same plant, different dealers have it for different prices and they're all the same. We've talked about a customer had written into us that used somebody in Florida that was charging like 12 cents a foot to transfer their Super 8 films. And they said they were, you know, digitizing them, that they were scanning the film. And then when they got them back, they're looking at them and going, wow, these don't look much better than my old VHS copies I had done 20 years ago. That's where you have to to be real careful, whether you're using us or anybody else out there. You kind of want to be careful with price because a lot of times you get what you pay for. So if somebody's going to take the time to actually buy the equipment that's very expensive to actually digitize your film, it's going to cost you a lot. And it ranges usually from 17 cents to 25 cents per foot, depending on what part of the country you're in. But you want to be very, very careful that they really are digitizing your film. And we've told them in the past, the best way to find out if they're truly digitizing your film is, even if you don't want this, ask for it. Say, oh, when you digitize my film, I want JPEGs of every frame of film so I can print them. And they go, well, I can't give you JPEGs, but you can do frame shots. They are not scanning your film, because if you're scanning your film, it's just as easy to make a JPEG from it as it is to make an AVI, an MP4, an MOV, any kind of thing that you want. So you want to make sure you ask the right questions.
Wow, and sounds like there are a lot of them to ask. So where would you start?
Well, the best thing to do, like I say, call around, get different prices. If somebody says they're scanning, they're charging under 17 cents a foot, there's no way they can be scanning, because when you figure the price of the labor to actually do it, the price of the equipment and everything,
sure,
it's not going to happen. And again, we tell you, go to Google Maps, do Street View, and look where their address is and see if it's an apartment complex or if it's really a strip mall or if it's an industrial area, you know, what's going on, and ask them for references. There's nothing wrong with asking somebody for references.
Now, how high could somebody go per foot, do you think, that would be still fair?
Well, I've seen people go as high as 32 cents, and they're quite a bit more than this. Mostly a lot of places online, they have these kits that you give them so much money, and then you fill their box with certain things and then send it in, they transfer it. And I've seen them as high as 32 cents. In our particular store, we usually charge 22 cents a foot to really scan it in high def. Now, some people will scan your film for less in standard def, but if you want to scan in high def, you're usually going to be right around 20 cents a foot to do it, whether it's Super 8, Regular 8, or whatever it is. And then you want to figure out what kind of add-ons. Are you going to want color correction? Are you going to want to add music to it? Are you going to want to be able to edit it, like Brent asked us about being able to do? So if you're going to want to edit it, you want it to go to a hard drive,
right?
Or you want to go to MP4s. And if you go to a hard drive, it depends what kind of a computer you have. If you have a newer PC, you can usually use AVIs or MOVs. If you have an older PC, you have to use AVIs. They won't understand an MOV. If you're using a Mac, it'll understand either one. However, I always like MOVs, because MOVs are smaller overall and they're better quality.
All right. And all the emails we're getting right now, Tom, seem to have to do with people wanting to get stuff digitized right now, because the holidays are pretty much upon us. We're really close to the deadline, aren't we?
In our particular store, we try to underpromise and say, hey, we'll do our best, but this is our cutoff date. And most years we get to catch up on it, and it's okay to do that. But I don't want anybody disappointed. And places in your neighborhood that are going to do it, they're probably all in the same thing. You don't want to go into a UPS store the day before the deadline for Christmas, because you're going to be standing in a huge line. If you have this big, huge thing, don't think, oh, I've got 10,000 feet of film, I'll only do 100 feet so I can get it for Christmas. Once we start on a project, we start on a project. And most other facilities out there are the same way. So if you have 10 VHS or one VHS, it's not going to make a difference whether you get done or not.
All right. Well, that's Rachel's question, is about 10 VHS. And she says she's got four or five of those small tapes that went into video recorders. And she's looking to be able to import them into iMovie and be able to edit them easily. So she wants to know what the price structure is for something like that.
Okay, that's a real good question, because there's a lot of different ways you can do it. It's usually always less expensive to go straight from videotape to DVD. But you can edit DVDs with, like, Wondershare. So if you have a DVD you need turned into an MOV or an MP4, whatever, you can do that with Wondershare. But it costs less and it's faster. Now, one thing, again, we want to talk about is with videotape, audio tape, film, anything, you want to make sure your transfer is done in real time. That means if your tape's 2 hours long, it's going to take them 2 hours plus some to actually transfer your tape.
Sure.
If they're transferring your tape in 15 minutes, they're doing it at high speed, letting the computer go and sort it back out, which can give you time shifts where your lip sync doesn't work. The quality is not as good either. So you want to make sure they're doing it in real time. And if somebody's charging you $10 to transfer your VHS 2-hour tape, they're not making any money.
Right. And you're not getting any good quality.
Exactly. So with the VHS-C tapes, there are several ways you can do them. If they're recorded in standard play mode, which is a 30-minute mode, you can usually get for sure three of them on a DVD. So if you try to cram all four onto one DVD, you have two options. You're either going to lose the last few minutes on your second one, or they're going to have to put the DVD in extended play mode, which is going to reduce your quality as well. So you want to be really, really careful. Different places have different price structure. We have a way where we can do it for X amount if there's one tape. If you want to do multiple multiple tapes, it's another amount, or if you want to do it by the hour. So if you have really, really short tapes, it's best to combine them all and then just pay an hourly rate, which could be like $30 an hour to do them. Or if you're just going to do the whole 30-minute tape, they're usually right around $15 each. So you want to be very, very careful that before you take them into the place, if you've got a VCR, see how long they are and write it down. So any homework you do by going through and say, oh, this tape's 2 minutes, this tape's 6 minutes, this tape's 8 minutes, then it's going to save you money because they'll know how to give you a better quote.
So am I understanding this correctly then, Tom? If I've got a tape that's, say, 60 minutes long, but only 15 minutes worth of recording on it, it's best for me to know how much is on there so I don't get charged for the entire tape?
Exactly. That's why it's important to take whatever you have and see how long each one of them is so you can either tell us or whoever you're taking them to, this tape's 5 minutes, this one's 60, this one's 30. If we're going to a hard drive, it's easy. If you have a regular VHS tape that's only got 10 minutes, we use computer assist so we can see where the blank areas are and cap those out and put just the good stuff on your hard drive. But if you're going to DVD, we usually run it all the way through because we've had people bring in a tape that played for 15 minutes, was blank for five, and played for another hour.
Wow. All right. A lot to take in. Thanks so much for the emails. And you can always reach out to Tom at asktom@tmcplace.com. Thanks so much, bud.
My pleasure.
And this segment of our show has been brought to you by MyHeritage.com. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. Thanks for joining us. Hey, once again, remember to sign up for our newsletter, The Weekly Genie. We'll share all kinds of links to great stories and audio segments from past shows and present shows. I'll also have a column there. We'll have guest columnists periodically as well. Sign up at ExtremeJeans.com. You'll see it right there on the right side at the top on the homepage. Talk to you next week. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family.